Testing, testing, testing. Say something for me.
Hello?
You hear both of us? Okay. Well, this is Princess Carter. I'm here with Larry Forrest. Today is March 15th, 2018, and we are sitting in the Roanoke College Library, Salem, Virginia. This is an interview for the Southwest Virginia LGBTQ Plus History Project, Oral History Initiative. So if you can just tell me your name, where you grew up, and, you know, a little bit about yourself.
My name is Larry Forrest. I grew up in Bedford, Virginia. It's like 30 miles east of Roanoke, so it's rural country on a farm. Mother, father, one brother and five sisters. Brother's 10 years older than me, so like when I was 10, he was out of the house. So father was a farmer, mother did odd jobs and things, if I remember. Sisters went to college as we were growing up, so it was a pretty, I thought we had it made living out in the country, because I loved the farm, and I loved the animals, and I loved being out in the country and running around, the fresh air, and the animals and things. All families have issues, so with the good, there was a bad, such as the father. He had a drinking problem and things, so sometimes he would like to fight things when he came home on weekends, so that wasn't nice. So it was like Monday through Friday was joy, and then we would anticipate the weekends. But all in all, you know, we never went hungry. We had food and shelter, so other than that, I thought it was pretty normal. Didn't say we had a lot of money, but in those days or that time, we all had the same things, so nobody looked at each other as being having more than the other. We just didn't even think about that. Though I'm sure, as I look back on it, you know, I wonder how we did survive sometimes with that many people in the house and that type of income, and sometimes no income, I guess. But we grew our own food. Had gardens. My grandmother had a huge garden, and we had a small garden. My mother, but she wasn't a garden person, so it didn't last that long. Because as a child, she grew up, she had to do it. So when she got married, she didn't know she wasn't going to do that. But so we had garden food, and my father, he was a farmer. He ran two farms, cattle and wheat and corn he would grow, and he would hire people out to help him collect the harvest when that came, such as the hay and stuff. And so that would come on to us, the beef and things, and we raised our own hogs, so we had pork and bacon and all that stuff. During the winter, when the temperature was right, we would slaughter them and have our own that way. So we all went to the same elementary school. I mean, I've got people I went to school with from the first grade all up to senior, because it was just two schools, 1 through 7, 8 through 12. So, and I love school, and I excelled at it. I love to read, because living in rural, you don't get to travel so much. So reading, you can travel through your mind to faraway places you may not see physically, that is. So I enjoy that. I did a little drawing and a little painting, and we learned how to develop pictures. I remember photography in the third grade, and I remember we had this aquarium. We took care of that, so it was a lot of things I learned, even though I was on the farm, that I've been introduced to. One thing I wish I would have learned, if I did live in the city, I would have probably took dancing lessons, because I like to dance. I probably took classical and ballet and a little bit of all of that, and maybe swimming too, because we didn't have, there wasn't any swimming facilities around for us to swim, so that's probably why I'm still afraid of water today. deep water.
So you said a little about your siblings. How's your relationship with your siblings? Are you close to your brother, close to your sisters?
We have the same parents sometimes. I was just asking myself the same question. We just have the same parents, depending on the situation. I would say we all got each other back when it comes to it. And sometimes we're all on the same level of consciousness. But sometimes I'm single, and they have spouses and family and children and grandchildren. So that takes a lot of their time. So
So how was your relationship with your parents? Are you, I know you talked about your dad's drinking. Mm-hmm. Are you still close with your dad?
Both my parents are dead. Oh. My father died in 75, so I was in like eighth grade. That was in February, so I was just got in eighth grade. And my mother died maybe 2010, maybe 8 years this October.
Did you see any of that affect your relationship with your siblings? Like, did you guys get closer, or did it not affect anything at all?
It probably did to a degree, I'm sure. Sometimes I felt like I was the only one taking up for my mom, and there were so many others in the house. Or why was this somebody that happened long? Because I was number 5 out of 7, so I'm sure it started way before I came along. There was abuse and things like that, and drinking or whatever. Kind of isolated sometimes. Because being in between 5 sisters, I didn't really have to share anything either. So I had my rooms I could retreat to and close everything out if I want to, where they shared everything. So that, I can see why sometimes I can see myself feeling separate, because I had that, not the luxury, but to just, you know, retreat in a way and withdrawal, just to, you know, be alone in a house full of plenty, of many.
So you talked a little bit about your family. How do you see your family shaping your sexuality? And did you come out to your family? Was it something that wasn't spoken about?
They had come out to my mom many years ago, not spoken about. But I have other. There's plenty of gay people in my family, so I mean, my mom had 2 gay brothers, and I had two gay uncles, I've got gay cousins, gay nieces, and that are out that I know of, so it wasn't spoken about, really.
Yeah,
but it wasn't like any mean or dirty looks or bad things talked about either. So it was just like, it was like accepted and moved on, okay. But it wasn't nothing ever discussed. I think if it maybe was discussed, it might have maybe explained some, maybe it might have explained to all the other family members, just have a conversation about it. It exists, you know, in case the younger people or something there, because they're going to see me. The more openly now gay people out there expressing themselves and just have a conversation about it. Back then, this wasn't talked about, even though it was obvious.
So, do you think because you had so many gay people in your family that mm-hmm. it allowed you to like express yourself more in your family through your sexuality?
I would say yeah. Because I could, you know, they weren't treated any different, none. So.
So you talked a little bit about school, and mm-hmm. you said you enjoyed school and you enjoyed reading. So, can you give me a little bit more about like your high school experience?
High school, I had a very easy high school. I started in 75 and graduated in 79. No bullying, no hassle. The way I am now, probably the way I was back then. I'm sure I was. I hung with more females than males back then, and it was, if anything was said, it was nothing said to my face. But I never experienced any, you know, never got in any fights, never got, you know, into the bad stuff that I've heard and read about.
So did you ever have like a coming out where you said, this is me, this is who I am, or was it just something that people knew about and like came up in casual conversation?
Casual conversation. If someone probably asked, I would tell. Other than that, I didn't reveal anything. If you wanted to know, I figured you ask, and that, and I would tell. But I guess.
So growing up in Roanoke, I know there was a lot of gay bars coming around. Mm-hmm. In like the 70s. So did you attend gay bars?
I went to my first gay bar, I believe, in the fall of September 79. And that's the first time I knew any balls bars exist. No, let me take it back. I graduated high school in 79, and I went to Chicago to visit my uncle. He lived in Chicago, and he was gay, and he had an apartment. So I stayed with them, and they took me to my first gay bar. And that's when I realized that there was a lifestyle that men could live together and work together and have an apartment like everybody else. And there was events and places they could attend just for them and not feel like being looked at or scorned. So that was my first one. But my first way in Roanoke was the park, and I didn't know about anything else, and I didn't know it exists. And someone took me there.
So did you see a big difference between the gay scene in Roanoke versus the gay scene in Chicago?
Well, it was, yeah, in a way. Well, to me, no, because they're both safe spaces to go. I put it in that, they had that in common. But as far as how many they go to and the different, you know, each of different themes they would carry, you know, some was leather bars only. So, you know, whereas the bar, everything went to one, you just saw bits and pieces. Well, up there, it was just one exclusively, you know, I guess if you wasn't dressed white, you might not got in because you didn't fit the scene. Or you might have went there knowing you heard it was just a gay bar, and being from a small town, you know, everything come to one bar, you go to that bar, and they would say, no, this is what this thing is about, and you might leave. So that's what I see different about it. But the bar fit everything in there. So it was like, in a way, you had all those different various aspects of gay, such as the drag queens and the leathers and maybe the butch queens and the lesbians. Back then, the women were just lesbians. There wasn't any change. They wanted to go. Whatever. I don't know. They got the drag kings, I guess that's what they call them, but that's not the true word. That's what they call them when they perform, but didn't seem to me that they were just women just dressing in men clothes, but not to the extent it is now that you can't tell them apart.
So, talk a little bit about like the separation between the bars in Roanoke.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see like a big drag community, a big lesbian community?
It was a big drag community because, as I remember, in the bar, it was like two different sets of drag queens. Because you had the black drag queens and the white drag queens. And two different poverty levels too. Well, if that's what you want to call it, you know, because most of the black drag queens were the ones who worked the street and prostituted themselves to make a living off of. And were the ones who had jobs would just dress up and come to the bar and stay inside, and the other ones would just stay outside, and they would come in maybe after one or two, after work or something. And that was the difference. But when it come down to performing, they all performed on the same level when it came to performing on the stage. So, that was the difference.
Yeah.
And I never could understand, you know, why, if you were, I didn't have a problem if you wanted to dress up and do that, but why dress up as a woman to be a prostitute? It didn't make sense to me, you know. But I guess it does. It's just, if they was expressing themselves, they were getting, you know, if they were able to do that, at least that was the joy, even though what they had to do wasn't a good thing. I mean, they had to survive, but they wasn't able to use that talent for something else, you know, besides that. Because it is a talent. I mean, you've never seen somebody get dressed. I have seen, I mean, even when I watch RuPaul's Drag Race, I've never seen it that extent, but it is a process. It is a process.
So, were you friends with any drag queens back then?
Yeah, a lot of them. I think my first drag queen I saw was Carolyn Sue Wilson. And I knew Grace, and I knew a lot of them that worked on the down the market is where they were. The one that where you eat at now, but it's not getting a lot of business. And that's that block right there is where the men would circle and pick them up. And back then, that was the only thing going on downtown, nothing else. There was no restaurants, there was no walking. At 5 o'clock, it became the dark light, the red light district, and people up there was known famous for all around Virginia. They would come here for that. If someone would come to, you know, participate in and pick them up, but some would just come for the attraction, just ride around and see. So,
sorry, I lost my train of thought. Did you?
And I know a lot of drag queens.
Yeah.
I know a lot of them.
Do you still come in contact with them today?
Oh, there's only two that I know left. A lot of them died. A lot of them died. I started dying in the 80s, 83, 88. I had a real good friend who grew up in the same town that I did. And he was, him and my sister behind me were in the same grade. He was going to Fairham College, and he discovered the park, and he wanted to be a drag queen. He became a drag queen. He was a prostitute, and he, but he had infected. Back then, that's when the early ages of HIV and AIDS was out. He got infected, and then he got cancer, and when you do the chemo thing, you don't already have the immune system. It didn't work out very well. Back then, that was the early stages, so it was, I know a lot of them, but today I know Carolyn's still around, and like you said, Grace, and I think, and some of them, some more that I knew just from entertainment, and you need to walk up and tip them and see them and say hi and everything, but the ones that I really knew that, you know, we went together, party together, rode around together, and all of that, a lot of them are gone. A lot of them are gone.
So are you seeing a difference between drag back then versus drag now?
Yeah, big difference, especially when it comes to everything, the entertainment of it, the how they perform, the look of it, and the glamour of it, because a lot of them, with like glamour, it was sort of a difference where the people, I don't know, it was like, they were like stars. Some of them would come. I mean, they came from South Carolina, all the way from Columbia, just to perform here in Myrtle Beach. And a lot of people just to come to that little, this little bar here. And so that, I mean, and that bar has sent out a lot of girls and made a lot of, won a lot of crowns, championship crowns. Miss America, Miss Day America was a big pageant. And a lot of them won the crown on that stage. And so it's a famous bar, it's well known around. It's going through some changing now, but it's still open, and it's a shame that it's sort of a rift in the community. So
have you seen, like, the younger generation? I've heard that the drag queens coming up now, they're a little more like disrespectful to the older drag queens. Have you seen that firsthand, or?
No, I haven't seen it or heard it. That doesn't mean it ain't happening, but a lot of the older doesn't perform at the park anymore. It seems like they have once or twice a year they have an event where they all perform and people, you can buy a ticket to see them. And these were the former owners of the bar that at the Jefferson Center, I do believe, a couple of months ago. It seems like when the ones, the older ones died out, that there was no one to train, because they would take young ones under their wing and show them how to, you know, the art and craft of it. So I guess if I was a young one doing it on my own and there was no one training me, I can see. Young people, you know, disrespect old people anyway. They would disrespect their parents. So yeah, I could see it happening. And because it's so easily acceptable. But instead of, you know.
So you talked about safe spaces and there mm-hmm. being like a safe space in Chicago and a safe space in Roanoke. Can you go into a little more detail about that?
What do you mean, safe space?
How do you feel like Roanoke was a safe space for you? And how do you feel like Chicago was a safe space for you? And compare the two and.
Just being around people of my type, other gay people, and knowing that I wasn't the only one like that, and there was a lifestyle, and it was okay to be that way. It was freeing in a way. It really helped me a lot, because it was like I would leave one type of environment, the working environment, which I still do today, but leave that and come up here just and have my gay lifestyle, the party, not that I party a lot, but just, you know, hang out with friends and things. And more freeing and less stressful, and not have to worry about being, you know, not that I did, because, but you didn't feel judged. You felt like it's a very safe environment. I feel safe that if I wanted to do anything, nobody would say anything to it. And that really, now you can think it, but when you do it, it's a different thing.
So you've never come into contact with anyone who you felt was judging you or had something negative to say about your sexuality?
Let me think. Probably have. How did I deal with it? Not in the gays, not at the bar or anything like that, I would say. Maybe as we was waiting in line, cars would drive by. Because I said, they would drive from all the way downtown Salem Avenue. Not only were we going around the market, the meat market, what we called it back in the day, they would go from, you know, all the way up Salem Avenue past the park, and slurs and words would be coming out and things, you know. But other than that, like I said, if it wasn't said in front of my face or enough to challenge or provoke or, you know, anything came from it that I can remember. But I'm off the top of my head, I don't remember any bad thing like that.
Did you happen to see any racial divide between the gay community in Roanoke?
I guess, well, as far as, do you think the whole gay community, or just, not just drag queens or anything? Or,
either or.
Well, I'd probably, like I said, when I started going in 79, everybody was going to the same place. Now, before then, I'm sure it was. I do know, I'm pretty sure if they couldn't go in the park, they probably went up on Henry Street. Because that, even though they were gay, their color worked for them. I'll just make it plain. So they were more acceptable up there to go in and hang out or just go in for a drink. Maybe not so much as a party and dance, but they would go there. But as far as I've been going to the park, everybody could go there, could go in. So it was open to all. And I've heard other bars that, but there were other bars and people that we couldn't get into, maybe it's a Trade Winds or something. Like, I've heard stories. I'm just not hearing stories about that, but I went in Trade Winds myself. So, 79, 80, after 79 at least, but someone took me in there. And I don't think we stayed long. We just walked in and looked around, maybe ordered a drink or something. It was another one, the Last Troll. I've been in there, and I was heard that was maybe a white male bar only. And that's the only two that I know we may have had trouble, black gays. Unless you was brought in, and you wouldn't walk in there. But most of the places, those two places, somewhere I did go with someone, and it was white.
Did you feel a closer connection to other queer people of color, or was it all LGBTQ plus people that you felt a connection to in Roanoke?
Probably, when I ran in with people of color. At the bar, it was both, mm-hmm. and that's it, because I would see them then, but if I came up, if I wasn't at the bar, my friends were mainly people of color.
Since there was a gay scene in Roanoke, did you, how was dating in the...
The dates were happening in Roanoke, and I would go back into the country. So, at the bar, it was a big place to meet people, one of the places to meet people. If you came to the bar, where you can actually, you know, see what they look like and all of that. There was other places if you wanted to go. I don't know if we would call it dating, but just to meet people, which was, there was a, just like the drag queens had a block to get picked up, the guys had one too. Then I passed the library. I don't know if you knew that or not. It was a street right beside the library that closes up between the library and the, I think it's health department now. And there used to be a street all the way down, and that was the Butch block where guys got picked up. So if you wanted, that was there. the male hustlers. I put them there, or if you just, because we would just go there just to hang out. It was a place to hang out. Not that you wouldn't get picked up, but just to look and see what was to be seen or looked, and they had that there. And then the adult bookstores, if they wanted, that was another place they would meet. But these were more guys who weren't, well, everybody met that, but mainly who was not out of the closet. The down low, they would call them back then, maybe even bisexual. They would meet there, but that was strictly for sex, mainly. But if you wanted to meet someone, you know, the park was a place. If you really wanted to meet a partner or somebody, and, you know, that kind of way, if you wanted to start a relationship. If you, the other two were just mainly for cruising, and I mean, something could come from it if you wanted to. Maybe it was at the Butch Block, but the bookstore was mainly for sex, in my opinion, still is.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the history of LGBTQ plus issues in Roanoke, or where you're from in the rural setting?
I guess it's non-existent in the rural setting. I mean, as far as someone, they would leave and come out to a city or something like that, a town. They would leave that and come congregate out. They'll probably live and work as a person. They probably express themselves through their personality and things, but there's nothing to hang out for them, or, you know, unless you had something at your house. But mainly I just work there and come out to communicate with more gay people, basically. So it's non-existent. The mine is, I don't know, and I don't see any, if it is, it's underground, I heard, but don't exist.
So, what do you think of the issues that LGBTQ plus youth are facing today?
I don't really understand why, if it's so much more accepted than it was in my period, that, you know, when they come out, it's not as bashful or, you know, hateful or backlash, I'm sure it is, but to me, it's a more open environment. I thought it'd be easier to come out today than it would when I was in the 75, and I was just starting a teenager. So that's, I don't understand that. But so, I guess it tells me it is more accepting, but yet it's the danger is still there. So that doesn't make sense to me. Issues they're facing. Well, it seems like it's branching out in such different categories. You know, LGBTQT, and I think it's a few more letters down the line that I don't know what they stand for. So it really, the definition of gay, it's not just two of the same sex sleeping together anymore, because it's just like, it's more, it's got a more personality. It's just, I mean, if all those LGBTQT, it's like it's sort of like a person can, whatever they're feeling, they can release it and be, it will fit in there, and then they can maybe live a whole life in a way, because if you're living your life two different ways, it's not whole, even though it's in one body, if that makes sense.
And do you think that's better or worse than how it was when you were growing up?
I say better. But it's still dangerous. But it's with all the information there, that's what I can't understand. I mean, there was no information, there was no services, there was nothing. Like, I didn't even know there was a word for me gay, you know, it was all those other negative words that names they would call you. That existed, not that was calling it. Probably was, but like I said, not to my face. That there was a gay lifestyle, but now it's, you know, I don't, so they shouldn't, I don't understand. If they, so much information. I guess I do understand, I guess it's the way the, like if I was a gay teenager and this, they came out to their family, it's, I guess it's their beliefs and what they believe in, how they were raised, they might stick to that conviction, religion, and the way they were raised instead of being in fear of being more open and dangerous and, you know, adventurous. And they stick to the norm because their parents stuck to the norm, and maybe they're afraid that getting out, that someone in the family, have a family member like that, or that, you know, here. Well, I guess it'll be anywhere. I can't say rural, but it can exist in the cities too. I mean, I'm sure if someone who lived in the city, rich, can still experience the same thing, you know, because they might want their kids to be a certain way, or take over their business or something, and they might not accept their gay lifestyle because it doesn't look right in the family tradition. They want to keep the family tradition.
And I know this, speaking of tradition and keeping the family face is something you see a lot, especially in the Black church. Have you seen that in your experience?
Yeah, that's another, what is it? Don't ask, don't tell. Yeah. Yeah. I do go to church. I don't go a whole lot. But I guess I've seen more, you know, it's more accepting if they're, you know, doing the musical part of the thing and things like that. And, but, you know, it was upsetting when if he did talk and condemn people for the way the sexuality, when they did a sermon about that, but yet it's pretty obvious you have a gay people in your church, but it's like you accept them because they're in the church, but then again, you got to stick to tradition and teach what it says and bash them. So it was like that. You compliment them and then you just say pow, and you're stamping right back down. So you're like, it's confusing. That was confusing.
And do you think that reflects upon the Black community itself and the attitudes that people of color have towards homosexuals?
I'd say yeah, because they people go with the norm so much, even though they in a community setting now sometimes. They want to keep the home, their business in the home, and keep that safe, and then the money, then they get out of the home. So they might be more accepting of you being gay, but not saying about it, staying in the closet, and all of that. And that way, they don't have to tell the community. So they might accept you that way, you are, but being out where others can see you, and they can hear someone say something or point a finger at them is probably...
And do you think that has an effect on
the kid?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, definitely, because it's mixed messages. Mixed messages, I would say. In one way, it's like you're telling them to, you can fly as high as you want to, but there's a rope around your ankles for them to yank it back down when something, if what's exposed, they don't want exposed. If that makes sense.
So it seems to be all about appearances.
Yeah, I would say. In the rural, I don't know, speaking for the rural, hush, hush. And that would, to me, that's I think people can shine and be as bright as they can, but it's like a dimmer bulb. You know, your light is on, but it's dim. It's not as bright as it can be because the tradition and that the phase is got it, won't let you can turn it up, but they're working the switch. If that makes sense. They're making sure, you know, keep you dim, so because if you get as bright as you can, it'll expose not only yourself but them too, and they might not be ready to walk with you in that light, that non-judgmental. They don't, because that's their issue themselves. Who knows what trigger that might be for them, you being gay. They think of something, what did I do for him to turn out that way? Or what, maybe they might have issues where something happened in them as a child and they suppressed it and never dealt with it, and this was the way it came out for them having a child. And they may be gay themselves and couldn't express it. I wasn't allowed to. I did have a friend that happened. I didn't know it created him to have PTSD from the, because he was gay, but his father couldn't accept it, and then just the abuse and the verbal thing mainly. He couldn't understand and just take that he had a gay son, so he really did a work on him. And that was like, I always thought PTSD was like war things, I didn't know it could be just somebody constantly, years and years and years. But he didn't stop being gay. But it did, it did at one point made him run away, and it was a sad story. He not ran away, but he left, and then left contact, meaning when they tried to contact me, but I guess changes in the number or email or whatever. And by the time he did reach out, it was too late. He had stomach cancer, so that was the only way they got back together as a family, because he got sick. He hadn't got sick, I don't think he was still alive. He'd probably still be avoiding them today from that. So that was sad.
So again, lost my train of thought, sorry. Well, going back to the youth, do you see a big generational gap between the youth of today and the older generation?
Oh God, yeah. But I was just thinking about that this morning. They're doing the same thing we did with different issues and with different level of consciousness. I guess each generation had their own things to deal with when it comes to society. So if I look at it that way, I have more in common with how it's not a difference. It's just that it's different problem and different things that they're dealing with. So that makes it much easier for me now. But before, I was like, I don't understand them. I have nothing in common with them. I don't understand. And it was like, I said, now I'm the old person saying it. So it takes, if you can remember you was a young person, I think that would help. But we forget if, when they see how they perform and how they act today is no different than what I did, because I would have done the same thing. I was doing the same thing, and we forget. And I don't know how to fix that, except through dialogue and conversation, maybe group settings or something. If someone have a forum of old gays and young ones, and we can find out. I don't know. That's a common ground. Or do they want to make common ground? Understanding of each other, or understanding of a community to be united, or something like that,
So what effects do you think this generational gap have on both the older generation and the younger generation?
What effects? It's probably the culture. Well, they're not, won't be able to burn as bright as they can then. But the two of them, they're not working for the same goal. If the common goal, which is, to have, for Southwest Virginia, this area, gay community, to be represented and be a powerful force. That if a light, they can see that we're doing good things in the community, working together. And so it's sort of like, what is that keeping you in the cube sort of thing? It's two separate things, and it won't burn as bright together. There can be one, and now we're going to bring it together, like I said, to a form of dialogue. But a lot of the older generation, it's gotten to the point that they just kind of withdraw and stay in themselves. They don't go out as much to participate, except on certain things like that. What they had with Jefferson, well, they're just at the age where they just want to not deal with it. You know, they've been there and done that, and so they can't be surprised how the youth do, because they, you know, at least they're keeping it going. And this is, if they're not getting ideas on how to do it, you come up with your own, or this is the way we're going to do it, and they reach out to their own level, you know, their own age area, maybe from one community to another, maybe to another state. But how did y'all tackle this? We have no idea, because there's no one here to show us how it used to be done. So that works through all things, like the older drag can show the younger drag how to be more professional, you know, hone their tasks. You know, you can do anything, but when you're doing it brand new and someone's been doing it for years, you can kind of watch you and put a new twist and maybe develop it into a fine tune like a guitar. That's all I can say. You know, you're a guitar, but you can't tune it yourself. Only someone who played it and walked it before and how to tune it, you know.
So you think it's important that we strive to bring these two groups together?
Yeah, at least dialogue. I think so, and it wouldn't hurt.
And how do you?
Because then they get lost, and you had to come up from your own, and that's what you have. And you can't complain then because you didn't participate. And say, well, you have to. If you don't participate, then what the other group come up with, then that's what it is. So that's all they had to work on. That's all they had to present, because no one showed them how to do it. So it is a loss. You lose a lot. They lose a lot. I guess that's the way it is with not just the world itself, I guess.
And how do you think a project like this brings the younger generation and the older generation together by through this telling of histories?
It showed the young, you know, that how we had to live as a gay person versus how they are now. You know, we couldn't walk down the street holding hands or kiss in public or none of that. We had to sneak around, do it. We couldn't. Sometimes we wouldn't even be in groups together. It was dangerous to be in groups. You know, a bunch of us. As far as being out, even and especially by yourself, I'm sure, but just being in groups, being hassled and stuff. So that's why I think they have it easier to express themselves. You know, that, you know, their personality and the way they dress, what they want. I mean, but back then, you know, we didn't have that freedom too. So that aspect, we had the freedom. But I think maybe mentally, that's still the same, because you still can have the freedom, but still be afraid. Maybe we talked about earlier of how you being gay or coming out in a way, even though you are, you know, looking the part and act, you know, it's still some danger in being openly gay, depending on where you're at, where you live at, or where you shop at. Go ahead. So, like I said, getting together, maybe. Well, getting together, or just reading or knowing other people's stories. Because I would love to see some young people's story, hear what they have to say. Because, like I think, so close in my mind, I said, you got it, you have it made. But then they can show me how they don't have it made. So that's what show me how you don't have it made when I think you have it made of being a man and walking, having a dress on in the daytime, and not being heckled and all of that.
So how do you see the future of the Roanoke Valley and its gay community?
Well, let's see. It looks like it's separate right now in two different parts. Maybe it's more than two parts. You got maybe the bar scene, and you have the park scene, that crowd, and you may have a crowd who is more the other crowd. What can I say? They are the ones who don't go to the park, but still maybe doing more work in the community instead of just doing the bar and party inside of the gay, because that's I think a lot of gays, what they do, that's how they participate and contribute to the gay side, is by, you know, just having a good time, but others are behind doing things such as this project and maybe social issues of gay. And not that the party scene don't care, but about those issues, but that's it's kind of separate and not. To me, it's two different type of gay communities, and that's what it is. That side that you support the pride and all of that, and the other one is they're starting out, not starting their own thing, but they're not in that side of the gay. And that's the divide. It's like a divide to me. I put it that way. In the future. Well, can I say this? When the body was going over a couple that I know of, maybe at least 2 years, maybe three. But they both still seem to be, they're still here, and they're still thriving. So that means that even though it's a divide, they're both living and thriving. It's not dead, so that's a good thing. So, maybe they both can grow from that. And I mean, it doesn't. Even though it may be two different types of, I don't know what to call it, divide, but as long as they're thriving, I guess that's healthy. But and maybe they can work together, that's all I can say. Do you think there's a divide in the community, personally?
Well, personally, I'm not very active in either part of the community, but...
Well, from what you heard and what stories have been talking, have more people think it's more separated, or do they think it's in one big unit?
I've heard from these interviews, I've heard a lot of people talk about the divide, so I definitely...
And they're kind of, we're all concerned. Is that a concern? But I think, like I said, it's still thriving. So that's. I think it'd be better. I think it's going to get to the point where it may die, and out the thought of it, they might even forget why even divide or the slash happened, and just come to common ground. But it may split up like they do in the major cities, where they have white gay pride and the black gay pride, or this gay pride and another gay pride. So. That can happen too, so. In a way, that might be, and that would show that we have a strong community in a way to support two big events in a right way, so that's positive. So I think it's, either way they go, it might be positive. As long as one don't die or die off, but living in a town with this amount of people, you would think it'd be one. It's like Miami or New York. You see that? I see it. It happens in those bigger cities, but in a smaller community, it divides. You don't have only a handful trying to survive instead of two hands. You only have one working, and that's the sad part, I see. But. What can I say? I'm not writing a script the way I want. So you just have to look what a silver lining.
Well, I'd like to thank you for coming out and telling your story.
You're welcome. I did something and contributed something to your project that you can use.
Thank you.
You're welcome.